Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you. Thanks. It's a clip, folks. Thank you. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live. This is live. It's not a podcast. It's not recorded. It's live. But it may be by the time you, it may be if you decide to podcast the show. But still in all, you know, whether it's live or podcasted or recorded, it's a great show. All right. Welcome to the show, everybody. And I want to apologize to those people who thought I was going to be on the air yesterday. President's Day. Okay, we decided to take it off and, you know, to celebrate President's Day, to be a part of the protests that's taking place all around the country. And because I do feel adamant about that. So we're back. And if anybody, you know, I mean, for the folks who tried to call in, for the guests that thought they were going to appear, that the show was going to be, no, we took off because it was a holiday. You know, so we don't take off. I don't take off many holidays on this show because I love doing the show. I love what I'm doing. And I do love all of you out there. You know, sometimes it's sometimes you get tired. You know, you get tired. You feel like you need a break. And that's what I took. I took a break. We took a Christmas break and all that kind of stuff. But we're back. Basically 4 days a week. And just because I was off yesterday, we added a show on Friday. So trying to make up for, you know, being off on Monday, on President's Day. So we added a show on Friday. I usually don't do that. It's just Monday through Thursday. But this time for this, we just added a show on Friday. And we have a whole slew of guests this week, folks. So, you know, you take tune in for that. Tonight we have Darlene Tipton, and she should be interesting. And we have a whole slew of actually, I'm booked up all the way till the end of the month, and I'm totally booked up for March. So if anybody want to be on the show, yeah, it's possible if someone calls off, if someone doesn't show up, and they cancel. People do cancel. I mean, I get a few cancellations, and I always respect those people who cancel, because at least they call, you know, to let you know, or they email to let you know that they can't make it, something else came up, or they decided they didn't want to do the show. That's okay. That's being respectful. When people, you know, when you book guests and they decide they can't show up, they'll let you know by emailing you, inboxing you, giving you a call. Maybe they will let you know. And I, as I've said, I totally appreciate that. Then for guests to just blow the show off, you know, you don't know what's going on. You're supposed to be here. The guests are the listeners are looking for you. I mean, the callers are they're looking for you. But, you know, it happens. I mean, it happens to the best of us. It happens. And most of the people don't blow the show off, but every now and then someone will say, George, I just can't make it. Or then you'll just have someone, George, I forgot to put you on my calendar. I just totally forgot. Can you reschedule? You know, people, it happens. Well, George, your show is just not the vehicle for me. I'm not coming on. You know, you get people like that, you know, so, and I totally understand. But, you know, it's when you public speaker and you're on the air and there's thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people listening to you. And, you know, they expect something, you know, because, you know, it's not that easy getting listeners. I mean, you really have to deliver, I think. You know, whether you're doing radio, internet radio, traditional radio, talk show, television talk show, you have to deliver. You have to keep that listener's attention. You don't keep their attention, they're going to cut you right off. You have to keep their attention. This goes for anything. And if you're thinking on being a radio show host or a television host, talk show, it's easy. The only thing I think you have to do is believe in yourself. You have to believe in yourself that you can do this. Mama, daddy, I mean, you have to believe. Of course, you have to have support. You know, people telling you you can do it and you can do it. That encourages you. And, you know, you got to have that motivation, that drive, and you have to have talent. There's people, like I've said before, people have asked me, George, did you go to a radio school? Did you go broadcasting classes or anything? Did you take any of those kinds of classes? No, no, and no. You know, I just felt like people kept telling me, even before I got into radio, they said, well, George, you have a nice voice. I mean, all through my life, they still, George, you have a nice voice. You know, I blew some of them off. Okay, all right, whatever. And, you know, a few years, I started to believe them, because I would record myself and I would listen to myself. I would say, George, you sound like you're white. And this opportunity came along. And I mean, even sometimes, you know, I was talking to one of the guests last week and he was talking about public speaking. How nervous and jittery sometimes people can get when they're talking in front of a live audience on stage, and you're facing that audience. I get jittery sometimes and nervous doing this show. I mean, sometimes I have a guest on and I'll be nervous if I'm going to ask the right question, if I'm going to say the same, if I'm trying not to stutter, try not to appear stupid or unknowledgeable. I sometimes get unnerving. I get nervous. And I've always discovered that, and I have discovered that it's natural. It's just something natural. Sometimes your nervousness can actually work for you instead of against you, you know. And right now I do this show. I don't care if there's 20 people listening or 20 million. It doesn't bother me. You know, I just be myself as I'm broadcasting during the show. I just be who I am. Do it the way I want to do it, not the way the bosses or the corporations or anybody else. I do this show the way I want it done. You know, so everything is me on this show. So if anything's screwed up or messed up or just not working for you, then the only person to blame is me, George Wilder Jr. You got a grief, a beef, or anything you want to say negative about the show? Hey, direct it straight to me. And a lot of times, you know, negative input can be positive. Because if you think there's something negative about the show, and I'll go look at it, and I'll take a look at it, and I'll, you know, make my obsession of the show to see if you're correct, and if you are, I'll make changes. You know, where I see it, or I'll make changes where I think changes should be done. You know, so you know, being negative is not all that bad. It can help out, you know, in some cases, but don't be too negative. I'm trying my best. Oh, okay. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We are going to take a break. I want to talk, before I do that, I really, really want to talk about this weather. I mean, it is just so gorgeous outside, especially in the city of Chicago. I mean, it feels like summer in the middle of February. It's summer, and it's going to be even hotter tomorrow. This is February. You know, the day after President's Day. And for the last few days, it's been overwhelmingly nice. It's been great. It's been beautiful. I mean, I went out this morning jogging, exercising, walking, enjoying the weather. It in the middle of winter, but it doesn't feel like winter. It feels like spring, April, May. It's scary. But you know what I think, folks? I think the city of Chicago, with all this great, great weather in the middle of February, in the middle of winter, I think we're being set up for the kill. I think that March, April, or either May, we're going to be getting some really, really horrible weather. In fact, they're saying that winter is about to return, I believe, this weekend. And I think we're going to get it. I mean, parts of California, Los Angeles, I mean, we heard about that, especially we've been hearing about the East Coast, you know, and Chicago, the Midwest. We're right in between those two coasts, you know, and I think we are going to be in for it. I mean, I think you out there enjoying it now, wearing shorts and short sleeve shirts and blouses, and the women are just as sexy as they can be. I mean, they can't wait for better weather, nice weather, so they can get out there wearing them leggings all up in there. Or you know what? It's just unbelievable the weather that we're having in this town, and I'm pretty sure that it's going for a lot of other Midwestern cities. Yeah. But this is awesome. It's awesome. I'm not complaining about the weather. I just wish it would last forever, actually. But I know it's not going to do that, because they say that winter is going to return by this coming weekend. But as of now, it is totally unbelievable. They are saying that the weather forecast has been doing nothing but breaking all kinds of records. And I totally believe it because I see it, I feel it, but it's wonderful, it's beautiful. And somehow I'm thinking that it should keep on being wonderful and beautiful and just gorgeous outside. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. You have been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on LinkedIn. I'm all over Twitter. I mean, Google. I mean, my name is synonymous with the internet. So there. And it's great to be back on the radio after, I think, 4 days off. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Monday because of the President's Day holiday. And that's why we've added an extra day this coming Friday. So we'll be on tonight, tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday. And back again on Monday. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Do we have this? Yes. Alrighty. Okay. Bring your own bag. I talked about that in a few shows back when the city of Chicago, during the beginning of this of the year 2017, one of the laws that went into effect in January last month, the date of the show, one of the laws that the Chicago the government, the mayor's office of the city of the city of Chicago, they tax us to death. And this was another tax, and it's law. So if you go shopping, no matter what you do, no matter what kind of shopping you do, if you need a bag, you have to pay for it. It's law. It's a tax that the city implemented last month. And I did a show, and I was very adamant about it. I think I spent an hour or something about telling people about this. I'm pretty sure a lot of Chicagoans already knew, but if they didn't know, they got the news from this show. And Yeah, it's another nickel and dime you kind of a tax. Bring your own bag, you know. And I was saying, you know, that this is wrong. This is wrong. We live in a city with the highest taxes in America, and all these people can do is sit around and think how they can get their hands into our pockets. That's all it is. And I was so angry, and I was so pissed off, and I was so mad because they are taxing us to the hilt. And when they tax us, they try to come up with some sort of spin that it's for our own good. It's for the good of the environment. No, that's a bunch of bull. They want the money for themselves. They always try to make up a goddamn excuse to why they're taxing the hell out of us. I mean, property taxes. I mean, this guy, Rahm Emanuel, he has already enacted and implemented a $588 million tax property increase. And the county, led by Toni Preckwinkle, we voted her in the office so we can stop being taxed to death. But somehow she's now in office, and she's never stopped taxing us. We're taxed up to the kazoo, if I can say it. So I'm recapping what I've talked about a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago. Actually 1 month ago, because this was implemented in January. So it was a month ago. And I'm recapping what I basically said. And I have some good news for those folks in the city of Chicago who are trying to fight these taxes. I was out this morning. I mean, I did some shopping this morning. I went here, I went there, spending, buying what I could. And I saw so many people, and I want to, you know, say I'm so proud of some of these folks for what they're doing. So many people bringing their own bags. They're not bringing their own bags because they can't afford to buy a 7 cent or a 10 cent bag. They're bringing their own bags to shove it back into the faces of these folks who are always taxing us to death. Of course, you can afford a 20 cent bag or 18 cent bag or a 7 cent bag, but it adds up. That little few little pennies and nickels adds up, especially for the city, because the city is counting on you not to bring a bag, not to bring your own bag, but to buy a bag, because that 7 cents or that 11 cents or that 18 cents is going into their coffers to do whatever the hell they want to do with it. We are the highest taxed city in America. And now we're being taxed by the internet. I mean, it is just phenomenal. And you say, well, buying a bag is nothing. Yeah, it may not be. Even if you can afford it, don't buy it. I mean, if you're pissed off at all of these taxes that these people in government are levying on you, then stop. Bring your own bag. Take your own bag. And I see this all the time. People taking their own bags. It's not a lot of people who are looking at people who are taking their own bags when they're going shopping. They're looking at these folks as being poor penny pinchers, or, you know, they don't have it, or, you know, it's not that. A lot of these folks can afford to buy 100 bags. The problem is that we are sick and tired of the city nickel and diming us to death. So if all of these people stop bringing bags and bring their own bags, you're going to hit the city in its pocketbook, you know, and they're going to find out that this doesn't work. But if this doesn't work, if this bag tax doesn't work for the city of Chicago and these people in government, they're going to sit around and try to find another way to tax us. I'm pretty sure that the mayor and the governor and the city council, they're probably employing people who all they do is try to find a way to tax you and me. I'm pretty sure, you know, find a way to tax. We need money. Find a way to tax the public. Tell them that it's beneficial to them if we, you know, rob them, if we go in their pockets and take their money. You know, and I want to say I am very, very proud of people who are taking their own bags. And if you out there and you live in the city of Chicago, you live in some state where or city that's taxing you to death, charging you for a damn bag when you go to the store, when you buy groceries. I mean, stick it back at them. I mean, we are the people. We can, these people put this stuff on us. We can stick it back to them. All we got to do is stick together. And I have a feeling this is having an effect on the government, because a lot of people are bringing their own bags. They'll spend it. They'll lie and say it's doing okay. It's fine. Is it? No, it's not. You know, and I'm proud of people bringing their own bag. Keep bringing your own bag. Stick it back to these folks that always taxing us to death. You know, I bring my own bag. I can afford to buy those. I mean, 20 cents. What is that? Nothing. But if you actually making groceries once a month and you have a cart full of groceries, you're going to need about 4, 5, 6 bags to put all that stuff in, you know, put your groceries in. Buying 6 or 7 bags, that adds up if everyone should do that. You know, but bring your own bags. That's what the government, that's what they're hoping that you, one of the things I think they're hoping is that you forget to bring a bag. Because if you forget to bring a bag, then they know you have to buy a bag. So do not forget to bring a bag. I mean, that's going to happen. We're all going to forget to bring it. Sometimes I'll walk into the store and say, God damn it, I forgot to bring a bag. And then I'm forced to buy a bag or just leave my groceries there. But usually, even though I can afford to buy a bag, I mean, you know, like I just said, it's nothing to buy a bag. But when you're trying to stick it back to the people who are sticking it to you, that little nickel and diming is going to mean a lot. So once again, I want to say, take my hat off to you guys out there in the city of Chicago and elsewhere who decide to take your own bags. I don't give a damn if you're making $10 an hour or $100 an hour or $300 an hour. Take your own bag. You know, if you are sick and tired of the damn taxes that these people are levying on us every damn 6 months. And right now, as I've just got through saying, right now, I bet somebody is sitting in government right now in someone's office trying to figure out how to tax us again. Because that's what this person is getting paid for, to figure out how are we going to tax them. I mean, I just got through talking to my son the other day, and I was telling him, son, nothing is free. Nothing in the world is free. Everything costs money. The air you breathe. If you're walking down the sidewalk, you're paying for that sidewalk. Everything costs money. Nothing is free. So if you think you're getting something for free, you better go back and think again. It's not free. And once again, I want to thank everybody who out there is bringing their own bags. You know, bring your own bag. I mean, these people are crazy. But a lot of us, like I just said, we're going to forget to bring our own bags. We may be getting off work. Oh, wow, I got to run into the store. You may not have a bag. So that's what the government is counting on. That's what Mayor Rahm Emanuel and his henchmen, the city council, this is what they're counting on, that you forget to bring a bag and that you have to pay it. Believe me, they don't want you not to buy a bag. And they may try to say that, or try to say it's beneficial for you. It ain't beneficial for you when they're going in your damn pocket every chance that they get. All right. You've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show. It's great to be back, folks. We're going to do this and we will be right back. Electoral College. A lot of people don't understand that.
I want to talk to you about the Electoral College and why it matters. All right, I know this doesn't sound like the most sensational topic of the day, but stay with me because I promise you it's one of the most important. To explain why requires a very brief civics review. The President and Vice President of the United States are not chosen by a nationwide popular vote of the American people. Rather, they are chosen by 538 electors. This process is spelled out in the United States Constitution. Why didn't the founders just make it easy and let the presidential candidate with the most votes claim victory? Why did they create, and why do we continue to need, this Electoral College? The answer is critical to understanding not only the Electoral College, but also America. The founders had no intention of creating a pure majority rule democracy. They knew from careful study of history what most have forgotten today or never learned. Pure democracies do not work. They implode. Democracy has been colorfully described as two wolves and a lamb voting on what's for dinner. In a pure democracy, bare majorities can easily tyrannize the rest of a country. The founders wanted to avoid this at all costs. This is why we have three branches of government: executive, legislative, and judicial. It's why each state has two senators, no matter what its population, but also different numbers of representatives based entirely on population. It's why it takes a supermajority in Congress and three-quarters of the states to change the Constitution. And it's why we have the Electoral College. Here's how the Electoral College works. The presidential election happens in two phases. The first phase is purely democratic. We hold 51 popular elections every presidential election year, one in each state and one in D.C. On election day in 2012, you may have thought you were voting for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, but you were really voting for a slate of presidential electors. In Rhode Island, for example, if you voted for Barack Obama, you voted for the state's four Democratic electors. If you voted for Mitt Romney, you were really voting for the state's four Republican electors. Part two of the election is held in December, and it is this December election among the state's 538 electors, not the November election, which officially determines the identity of the next president. At least 270 votes are needed to win. Why is this so important? Because the system encourages coalition building and national campaigning. In order to win, a candidate must have the support of many different types of voters from various parts of the country. Winning only the South or the Midwest is not good enough. You cannot win 270 electoral votes if only one part of the country is supporting you. But if winning were only about getting the most votes, a candidate might concentrate all of his efforts in the biggest cities or the biggest states. Why would that candidate care about what people in West Virginia or Iowa or Montana think? But you might ask, isn't the election really only about the so-called swing states? Actually, no. If nothing else, safe and swing states are constantly changing. California voted safely Republican as recently as 1988. Texas used to vote Democrat. Neither New Hampshire nor Virginia used to be swing states. Most people think that George W. Bush won the 2000 election because of Florida. Well, sort of, but he really won the election because he managed to flip one state which the Democrats thought was safe, West Virginia. Its four electoral votes turned out to be decisive. No political party can ignore any state for too long without suffering the consequences. Every state, and therefore every voter in every state, is important. The Electoral College also makes it harder to steal elections. Votes must be stolen in the right state in order to change the outcome of the Electoral College. With so many swing states, this is hard to predict and hard to do. But without the Electoral College, any vote stolen in any precinct in the country could affect the national outcome, even if that vote was easily stolen in the bluest California precinct or the reddest Texas one. The Electoral College is an ingenious method of selecting a president for a great, diverse republic such as our own. It protects against the tyranny of the majority, encourages coalition building, and discourages voter fraud. Our founders were proud of it. We can be too. I'm Tara Ross for Prager University.
Join
All right,
Prager
thank
University.
You for that.
Click here to subscribe All right, get on. To our YouTube channel. Click here to sign up for free at PragerU.com right. for quizzes, yeah, contests.
Okay. All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Trump tangles ties with anti-Semitics. I don't know. This guy, he's rewriting his travel ban so the courts won't have anything to do, can't have anything to do with it because he's going to try to stay within the Constitution. Okay. When we see that, we will believe that. All right. Chris Brown is in trouble again. I mean, when isn't this guy in trouble? You know, some girl with a name I can't pronounce. She has a restraining order out on the guy. You know, we all know about Rihanna. I'm not one of those gossip shows, folks. I'm just trying to get through this one. Here he is here. Let's see if we can get him back. Okay. Yeah, Chris Brown X gets restraining order. I don't need to know the details because I really don't care. I'm not interested. You know, so I was talking to my kid the other day about college, and he's going to be going to college in a couple of years. And I wanted, and he, my child, this guy still doesn't know what he wants to be. He doesn't, I mean, I've been explaining this to him forever, explaining what he's going to have to do, what he's going to need once he graduates high school and goes on to college. And I think that it's a lot of kids out there who don't know. They think college is just another school. You know, they think it's just, well, if they go, I try to tell my son, college is not just another school. It's optional. I mean, you can go, or you don't want to go, or you don't have to go. But he's going to go because I've told him that, you know, obviously most kids, most parents who send their kids to school, to college, wants their kids to have a super career. That's one, a good job. I told him one of the basic reasons for going to college is to get a good job. You can get a job if you just have a high school diploma, but you know, there's no doubt about it. You get more money. Your paycheck will be a lot higher if you have college on your resume. So I was talking to him, but he doesn't know what he wants to be. What I say, what are you going to major in? I told him what major meant, you know, so excuse me, stuttering. I had to explain to him about loans. You know, I really don't want my kid to be dealing with any loans because that, you know, I think it's a scam or something that where it ties young people up for life. I mean, some people, you know, loans can really trip you up. You'll wind up paying for that. You wind up paying that loan back for the rest of your life because that's the way the lenders are going to do it. They want to keep you in a grip, you know, but, you know, he has to know about financial loans and all that kind of thing. So I tried to explain it to him. And I told him that he needed to figure out what kind of career that he wanted to go into. I mean, he's 17, 18 years old now, and he's going to have to, I mean, the world we live in, you know, equates that he should make up his mind as soon as he can. You know, I mean, he can't. I mean, I think there's a lot of kids out there who are college bound, still don't know what they really want to do in life, but they're going to have to figure it out. You know, they're going to have to figure it out. Because basically that's what college is for. I mean, find out what you want to do in life, then go to college, take some classes, and, you know, find yourself a great career, making good money. But you have to know what you want to do in your life. You have to know what you want to do. You know, I know my son can't play sports. I know he'll never be a doctor. I know he'll never be a lawyer. He could be. He's a smart kid. He gets A's and B's, and the teachers and staff and faculty at his school, I mean, they say great things about him. They say wonderful things about him. But you know, you got to be realistic. You know, I'd rather for him to be, can he maybe a teacher or something? You know, sure don't want him at Burger King for too long. You know. But Burger King is okay as long as you're working your way toward something a lot better, working your way toward a career. And I think he is. He's a very smart guy, very intelligent guy. And I'm proud of it. I am totally proud of him. I have beat my head against the wall to try and get this guy to see things the way the rest of the world, the way the rest of the world does. And I think I've probably been a little bit successful. All right. I want to talk about Be Somebody. A lot of people out here, that's why I have basically a lot of motivational people on the show, because I want them on the show because they are about making the world a better place. And that's what this show is about. And I've talked about be somebody great. You know, there's a lot of people out here who need motivating. A lot of people out here who need to be kicked in the rump in order for the in order to get them to do things that they should be doing to better their lives and the lives of the people who are around them, mainly their families. Be somebody. Get up off the couch. Get out there and be proactive. You know, get out there. If you want something, I've told my son so many times, I said, you can be anything you want to be in this world. You are young. You're nice looking. You're healthy. You're smart. You're bright. What is stopping you? What is stopping you? The world is at his feet and is at your feet. You just have to get out there and do it. Nothing's going to come to you. You have to go get it. You want something in life, you have to go get it. You don't go get it, you don't get it. It will not come to you. You have to be proactive. I mean, you're the one that's got to do this. No one's going to do it for you. There's too many people out here right now that are sitting back, laying back, complaining, and doing nothing. And these are young people, old people too. You guys got to get out there and do it for yourself also, because if you look at Hillary Clinton, she's 69. If you look at Donald Trump, he's 70. I mean, hey, wow, Bernie Sanders is 75. So age should not play any part in someone wanting to make something out of themselves than what they already are. I've said this a million times. Don't let age stop you. You know, I mean, you can be in your late 70s and you can still be trying to find that elusive dream, that American dream. Age is nothing but a number. Believe me, that's all it is. If you live to be 100 or 110, you're going to have so many people gathering around you asking you, how did you do it? What did you do to make yourself to be around for so long? What did you do to make yourself healthy? What did you do to live? You're going to be, and that person that you're surrounding is somebody, because that person is somebody you want to know, because you want to know how that person lived so long to be 110. What did he do? What did she do? How? Tell me what you did so I can do it. That person that made something out of themselves because they lived for so long. So don't let age deter you. It should not. It should not. Age should not deter you. You know, I mean, if you're young, I mean, hey, wow, get out there and do something with your life. Get out there. And my seniors and the elderly people, if you're healthy, I mean, and it's great weather outside, get out there and enjoy it. 15, 20 minute walk. It will do you so much good. And I've always said this on the show. You don't have to, you don't have to take a lot of medication for any ailment. The only medication that you should take for an ailment is probably exercise. Exercise can cure any ailment that you have. However, a lot of people don't do that. The medical industry is profitable. They profit off keeping you sick. They're going to make sure that you stay sick so you can run to the drugstore or run to the doctor and get that medication, which is probably going to kill you anyway because it has so many side effects. So exercise, eat right. It's totally. And you can cure diabetes. You can cure cancer. You can cure heart disease. You don't need medicine. You don't need a medicine man or a wizard to tell you how to cure these diseases when all you have to do is stay active, eat right, think positive, and exercise your brain. Those are the only elements that you need to live long and to be active, to be positive. Smile, laugh. You know, those things beats feeling sad, depressed, and frowning. You know, because depression is a disease. Feeling sad and lonely is a disease. Loneliness will kill you. Now, there's a lot of people out here who are alone and they love it. But if you're alone and you don't want to be alone and it's making you depressed, you better see a doctor. You know, and if you're alone, especially if you're elderly, and if you're elderly and you're maybe a senior and you're alone and you're feeling depressed, get out of the house. I mean, there's plenty of senior centers around where you can go and be with people, be around people, make friends with those folks who are the same age you are, or maybe even older. It doesn't make sense to sit around and be miserable, be lonely, you know. Get out there and do something with your life. Have fun, you know. And it doesn't matter what age you are. It doesn't matter what age you are. Look, Bernie Sanders, 75, 76 years old. Ran for the presidency. He almost had it. I actually think if Hillary Clinton, she came with a lot of baggage, as we all know. But Bernie didn't have any baggage. And he would have beaten Donald Trump. There's no doubt about it. If it was, you know, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders head to head, Bernie Sanders would have slaughtered this guy, even in the Electoral College. But one of the things I admire about Bernie Sanders, that he actually motivated people his age, a little bit under and over his age. He motivated people to say, hey, wow, just because you're in your 70s doesn't mean that you can't run for president and win. Just because you're in your 70s doesn't mean that you can't be a leader. Just because you're in your 70s doesn't mean you have to sit around the house, lay around the house, get fat and complain about everything. Get out there and get active. Be proactive. You want something out of life, go get it. It's not going to come to you. It's not going to knock. Nobody's going to knock on your door and say, hey, wow, I got a great career for you. You got to go out there and get it. A lot of things are done online right now, but even if you're going online looking for something, at least you're being proactive about it. And you need support. You need support of people who know that you can do it. You need that support, because that support gives you confidence to go on and to do the things you want to do, the things that you love doing. Don't do things for other people. Do things for yourself, because there's so many people out here thinking that you're doing something for them. You're trying to impress those folks over there. The only person you want to impress is yourself. You impress yourself, then automatically they will be impressed also. You don't impress yourself, you don't do the right things, then they are not going to be impressed with you either. You have to do the right thing. You have to know what you want out of life. You have to know what you want to be. You have to know where you want to go. And then do it. Then do it. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to listen to Elizabeth Warren.
Hello, women of Massachusetts. And hello, friends of women of Massachusetts. Yeah. I love you too. I am glad to have this chance to stand shoulder to shoulder to fight alongside the mayor of Boston for the people of this country. Thank you. So, we're here today because of the power of women. The power of women to come up with good ideas like this rally. The power of women to organize like this rally. And the power of women to make sure that as our country enters a new political era, that the voices of the people will be heard. Yesterday, Donald Trump was sworn in as president. Sight is now burned into my eyes forever. And I hope the same is true for you, because we will not forget. We do not want to forget. We will use that vision to make sure that we fight harder, we fight tougher, and we fight more passionately for than ever, not just for the people whom Donald Trump supports, but for all of America. Yeah! People are worried. Donald Trump's campaign was about attacks on women, attacks on African Americans, attacks on Latinos, attacks on religious groups, attacks on immigrants. A Trump-Pence Supreme Court could overturn Roe versus Wade and dissolve marriages of LGBTQ citizens. A Republican Congress is eager to rip away health care from millions of Americans. America's hardworking families have taken one punch after another. Decades of trickle-down economics. And attacks on unions, attacks on wages, attacks on pensions, attacks on health care, attacks on Social Security, attacks on education, attacks on infrastructure, and financial regulation have gutted America's middle class. A broken criminal justice system, a broken voting rights system, and decades of systematic racism have kept people of color from having the same opportunities as other Americans throughout this country. The fact is that the playing field has been tilted badly in favor of those at the top for a generation now. And now, President Trump and the Republican Congress are ready to ram through laws that will tilt it even harder. Now, we can whimper, we can whine, or we can fight back. Me, I'm here to fight back. I'm here to fight back. And that is why we come together today. Hundreds of thousands of people in Boston, in Washington, and across this country, we are in marches to say we are fighting back. That's who we are. We come here to stand shoulder to shoulder, to make clear we are here, we will not be silent. We will not play dead. We will fight for what we believe in.
Yeah! You bet.
We have a vision, and that vision defines who we are as a people. First, we fight for basic dignity and respect for every human being, period. No compromise, no backing up. And second, we fight for economic opportunity, not just for those at the top, but for everyone. All of our kids deserve a fighting chance to get ahead. Respect for everyone, economic opportunity for everyone. That is the American deal, and that's what we fight for. You know, those core principles call out the best in who we are. For too long, American families have seen a government and an economy that isn't working for them. And Trump and the Republicans promised to make America worse. But we're here because we are ready to fight for the people who want to build a country that works for all of us. That's why we're here. We come together to give each other strength. We come together to give each other courage. We come together to remind each other of our values. As we get ready to march, let us remind each other what we believe in and why we fight and why we will keep right on fighting. We believe that no one in this country should work full time and live in poverty. And that means raising the minimum wage. Yes, it does. Paid overtime, sick leave, we will fight for it. We believe that workers have a right to come together and to bargain together. Unions built America's middle class, and unions will rebuild America's middle class. We believe that every young person is entitled to get an education without getting crushed by student loan debt. We believe in debt-free college. Now, I'm going to say something that is really controversial in some places in Washington. We believe in science. Climate change is real, and we have a moral responsibility to protect this earth for our children and our grandchildren. We also believe that immigration makes us a stronger country. We will not build a stupid wall. Believe that sexism, racism, homophobia, and bigotry have no place in this country. Black lives matter. Diversity makes our country stronger. We believe that equal means equal. And that's true in marriage. It's true every place. We will never stop fighting to ensure equality for all of our citizens. You know, I could do this all day. One more that I cannot believe I have to do in 2017. We believe in equal pay for equal work and a woman's right to decisions over her own body.
Yes! 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 You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
Yeah, we are back. That was one of my favorites, Elizabeth Warren. She's always welcome on this show. She's just a firestorm out there, and we're lucky to have her, folks. This is something that caught my eye. Burger King, the Burger King owner, to buy Popeye's fried chicken for $1 billion, $1.8 billion. Sorry. That's a lot of money. that's quite a lot for me to even say. So Burger King is going to buy Popeye's chicken. Well, yeah, you know, I was thinking there was going to be a merger or something, but they're going to buy these people right out. And I'm thinking that Popeye's is pretty cool with this. And that's something. You know, that's something to look forward to, you know. So, but one of the things I can say about Popeyes, it's a very, very popular restaurant. I mean, we have one around here. And every time we're passing it, a lot of people, I mean, the lines are out the door for this chicken at Popeyes, at least in the area that I'm in. And it's a very, very popular franchise. And they are making money. I mean, the stock is just going through the roof. They are making money. And I believe that's the reason why Burger King wants to buy it. You know, so good luck with that. I don't eat the chicken no way. I mean, I think it's, you know, well, that's me. That's me. I'd rather cook my own. I'm a cook, folks. All right. The NFL free agency buzz. Jay Cutler is on the cutting block. I kind of agree with that because I do think the Chicago Bears, the football team, with 3-13 season last year, something has to give. I think Jay Cutler he's been 8 years in the city of Chicago. 8 years. I think that's, and nothing has actually been produced by this guy. So I think it's actually way overdue for him to leave, to go, and for the Bears, to the Chicago Bears, the football team, to find another quarterback. You know, I mean, I think he's done, at least in the city of Chicago. And Jay knows he's done. I mean, Jay's young. He's a good looking guy. He's rich. I mean, and I'm pretty sure some team is going to pick him up. Now, he'll probably be a second or third string quarterback to someone in the league. And that's great. I'm pretty sure he'll probably want that, you know. So, and I'm not going to be too critical of Jay Cutler because I do think that Jay Cutler, the quarterback for the Bears, the former quarterback, I think he's a good quarterback. I just think he just had a bunch of bad luck. I think he's I think he could have been a great quarterback. I just think he just had a, there's the guy had a lot of bad luck. That's my opinion. I mean, you listen to some of these sports shows. I mean, you know, they may say the same, but you know, I don't think he was, I can't say he was a total rotten or a failure as a quarterback, a rotten quarterback, but you know, I think he just had a lot of bad luck. And he continued to have that bad luck. It seems like he could not get around that bad luck. So shopping Jay Cutler, I think it's a good thing. I think the Bears need to start from the bottom to build all the way up. And I think the Bears should also get rid of the general manager. I think he has to go too. You know, because he is responsible for putting these players on the field, you know, so I think he should go too. I think it should be a clean slate, you know, so Jay Cutler is being tossed around and really this is saying that this is not saying that he's not going to be back with the Chicago Bears. It's just that it's kind of saying that the Bears are just looking at other options to Jay Cutler. to Jay Cutler. And I personally think that he has done and he is done in the city of Chicago as the Bears quarterback, the Chicago Bears quarterback. And I wish him all the luck in the world, wherever he goes, whatever team that might, you know, decide they want to go with him. I mean, you know, that's you got to wish the guy a lot of luck. But he's maybe it's possibility with another team. It may be a little different. He may be, a great quarterback or at least a good quarterback for another team, but that remains to be seen. So Jay Cutler hopefully is out of the city of Chicago in terms of the Chicago Bears, you know? All right, that's Jay Cutler. And folks, it is still Black History Month, and before the show is over, I'm going to do Martin Luther King's 1963 I Have a Dream speech. I'm doing it for Black History Month, but you know, Black history, white history, we all have to, we all living on this earth together. We all living in America together. We have to come together. We cannot be divided. We are one divided country. I mean, when someone said a house divided against itself cannot stand. And I believe that's true. I totally believe that's true. Okay, we know that the Republicans, most of the Republicans, they control Congress. They have these, you probably heard this, a lot of these Republicans, they go home and they have these town hall meetings. And a lot of these town hall meetings are pretty, pretty rough. I've seen a few. Some of these Republicans are pissed off, and you know, I mean, but their constituency is pissed off a lot more because these people are not doing what their constituency want them to be. So when that town hall meeting comes, the Republicans, especially these representatives, they get their asses handed to them, and it's a joy to see, folks. To see the Republicans, the representatives in Congress, U.S. Congress, come home to these town hall meetings, and 1,000 or more people are waiting for them, and just jump dead in their asses. Because a lot of these people, folks, they're not representing you or me. A lot of these folks in Congress, controlled by the Republicans, they are not there for you or me. They are there for their party. And they're doing what the party bosses want them to do. There is no doubt about that. You know, you vote for these guys, you vote for a representative, you vote for a senator, you send these people to Congress. Suddenly, you know, they no longer have your interests at heart. They are in with the rest of the pack. When it comes to their party, it's about their party, about their ideology, about what they want to do, not what you want. And you voted them in office. You're the reason why they got their jobs. You're the reason why they have the greatest health care in America. But yet they want to take away your health care, and you gave them the best health care by voting for them. And they turn around and want to cut your health care in half or outright eliminated. Some of these guys are not, and this is the truth, some of these guys that we put in office, they turn their backs on us, they lie, they cheat, they thug, they are corrupt. They are out for their own party. And they adhere to the party bosses. This is the reason why a lot of these Republicans at some of these town halls, they say that you're not going to intimidate them. They're not going to do what you want them to do, even though you voted for them. And they forget that they represent you. They don't represent their party. They represent the people who put their asses in office, but they can't seem to get next to that. And a lot of these folks are skipping, a lot of these politicians are skipping these town hall meetings because they don't want to get their asses handed to them by their constituency. And their constituency are the people who put their asses in that office. They put those politicians in those positions by voting for them. And the politicians turn it back around and they spit on the people who voted for them. Literally, I think. So whenever I hear a politician is getting his ass handed to him or her, when they go to these town hall meetings, I say, hey, wow, good thing. Great. Good. And it's funny and it's kind of comical too, but it's a great thing to see and to hear that a lot of these rotten politicians who are in it only for themselves are getting their asses handed to them at these town hall meetings by their constituency. That's a great thing. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show. Apparently, my guest didn't show up. She obviously she forgot or just blew it off. And as I was saying at the beginning of the show, that you know, I love it when people drop me an email or call me or something and tell me that they can't do the show because, you know, because when people call and let me know they're not going to be on the show, I immediately reschedule them. But when someone blows the show off, don't call, don't say anything, you're expecting them and people are out there who are listening are expecting them, and then they don't show up, then that person probably will not be back on the show because that person showed no respect enough to call and say they weren't going to be on the show. You know, I mean, Darlene Tipton is the one who asked me if she could be on the show. And I said, yes. But now she didn't show up. I'm pretty sure she has some wild ass excuse, but it depends on what kind of excuse that she's going to be giving for me to want to reschedule her again. Anyway, if you're out there, you've been looking for Darlene Tipton to be on the show. Sorry, maybe next time, depends on her excuse. All right, we're going to do this. All right, folks, here is Martin Luther King. I Have a Dream. It's Black History Month, so I thought I'd do this again. I did it once. I played the clip once, but I'm going to do it again before the month of February is out because a lot of people are celebrating Black History Month. And this is Martin Luther King from 1963, I Have a Dream speech.
At this time, I have the honor to present to you the moral leader of our nation. I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content
will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. And they have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back
to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though...
All righty, we'll replay that tomorrow. We're going to do it again tomorrow. We're running out of time. And I...
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a claw. Heaven help us all.
Everybody for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. You can always find me on Facebook, Twitter, Google, I'm all, you name it, 90 seconds, all right. Instagram, Facebook, you know the drill. Amazon.com. I'm all over the joint, believe me. And thanks for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I hope you guys join me tomorrow. We will be back with more fun, more guests, and just ranting on tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody.